Thank you. Welcome. Today is February 1st, 2011, and all is well. Looking at the monthly planetary planner, for those of you listening to this as a podcast on the internet, you will find this on the first page of my website, drewlawrence.com, over on the right. It says Monthly Planetary Planners. You open that up, you find your nearest region. So as we are sitting here in Ireland, I have the Irish and the UK region in front of me. We have some gold days coming up on the 6th, 7th, and 8th of February. We have some silver days coming up on the 11th, 12th, 13th. Silver again on the 16th, 17th. 16th, 17th, and that's it for, it changes to gold right at the tail end of the month, the last day, changes to gold. Those are especially favorable days, the silver days and the gold days, for beginning important work, signing contracts, generally speaking, buying important things. Not like groceries, but like cars and houses and important things. Washers, dryers, whatever the case may be. So, as we've said many times before, the planner is not specific to anybody. It's just a general influence of where the planets are in the sky and the best days to do things. To reiterate, because many people think that I get many people asking me, I can't do things on a bronze day. Bronze days are fine. Nothing wrong with bronze days. They're also fine. They're just not exceptional, like silver and gold. That's all. Tomorrow is the new moon. So if you got anything you want to start, like fasting or a vow, or anything you want to begin. The new moon is when the sun and the moon are together. The sun, the male energy, and the moon, the female energy, coming together, they can then conceive something. When the male and the female come together, they conceive. That is the new moon. And then whatever that idea, that intention, that prayer, that thought, it begins to gestate and grow from there. So according to the lunar cycle, then it culminates 15 days later in the full moon. So I'm not saying you can only do it for 15 days, but that is the purpose of the new moon. It's a gestation, generation, incubation period. Right. So, there you have it. Now, there's been some to-do lately. I'm not going to give this much energy about an astronomer. I don't know his name. He's a Jewish guy, I think. And he's discovered yet again, I might add, that the Western Zodiac and the calculation for the Western Zodiac, which you will find in the newspaper under horoscopes, you'll find it there right away, any magazine, is erroneous. It's incorrect. Well, of course, we've been saying that for thousands of years in the Vedic system, because the Vedic system is based on the fixed stars, using the fixed stars or constellations as a backdrop for all calculations. And there is a differential of about 23 degrees from the Western to the Vedic system. Astronomers, this is not the first astronomer to have discovered that. Many astronomers already know this because according to astronomical or scientific mathematical calculation, it's a fact. And Western astrology, which is based on the sun's position in relation to the earth or vice versa, and that's, they determine the beginning of the zodiac on or about the 21st of March, and that's supposed to be when sun enters 0 degrees of Aries, first day of spring. Only because the earth has a wobble called nutation, that equinoctial point of 0 degrees Aries goes backward 50 seconds each year. Now remember, degrees, minutes, seconds. 360 degrees in a circle, 60 minutes in each degree, 60 seconds in each minute. So you're saying, well, it's negligible. It's minute. It's mathematics, my friends. Nothing's negligible in mathematics. 50 seconds per year. Backwards. If we call this the precession of the equinoxes, of the equinoctial points. Precession means gone backwards. Until it goes all the way around. Right? And how long does that take? 25,870 years. Only. Okay? So where are we at now? When they say in Western astrology, well, here we are, March 21st, 22nd, first day of spring, the sun has now entered 0 degrees of Aries, and the zodiac has recommenced. Oops. Something's wrong here. Because we use, in Vedic, we use the backdrop of stars. So the first star is Ashvini. That's Kalindi. She's Ashvini. Ashvini is the first star of the zodiac. Ashvini is the
horse.
The horse. The twins, yes, the twins, the Ashvins, but the horse. So what you find is, okay, so if we know that Aries begins at this constellation, Ashvini, and we're March 22nd, and we're looking, and we're going, wait a second, where's Ashvini? It's not there. Oh, he's over there. He's 23 degrees backwards. Or the zodiac, the equinoctial point is 23 degrees backwards, not Ashvini. Ashvini is there, equinoctial point's over there. So, we are now in the previous sign, which is? What's before Aries? Pisces. So, we're about 6 degrees of Pisces. That's why, when you see your Vedic sun sign as compared to your Western sun sign, it's either the same, sometimes it's the same, or it's backwards. It's the one before, the previous one. That's why. Right. So, I've been saying this for myself 34 years since my study began. To whom? Well, anyone who would listen, who's interested. Now, your man has discovered this recently, so I'll pat him on the back. That a boy. Well done. But he's inserted a 13th sign. Oh, I can't pat him on the back for that now. So, I can't even get into all that. The reason being, we have to place our faith somewhere. Where, in what, in whom do you place your faith? you say, well, I place my faith in science. Okay? I said science and all my pages fell off my stand here. And science keeps changing their theories. You know, we used to have a geocentric universe. And then what's his name came along? Was it Newton or who was it? Kepler. And he said, no, it's a heliocentric universe. They almost hung the guy. Their theories keep changing. And plus they're imperfect beings. And plus many of them are atheists. But you'll never win my vote. So I don't place my faith in science. You can if you like. That's fine. Or you can place your faith in politics. Or you can place your faith in money. Or you can place your faith in anything. You have to take, to some extent, on some level, you must accept somebody as an authority. That's why you tune into the weather report. In the morning or on your iPhone or in the newspaper, you listen to the weather because you want to know what the weather is going to be like. You hope to accept the weather service as the authority. Sometimes they are, sometimes not so. But that's a simple example. So just depends where you want to place your faith. I place my faith, having discovered yoga philosophy, meditation, Vedic science. It's a science. All the sciences are described in the Vedas. I place my faith there. And it dates back thousands of years. So that's why when these guys come up with their discoveries, they're going, yeah, ho-hum. Doesn't mean much. Okay. Any questions, comments on any of that? Yeah, it's a good grade A tomorrow. Depends what it is, you know. Depends what it is.
I'm practicing Ashtanga yoga, and we're told not to practice on a moon day. Because the energy is nice.
What do you mean a moon day?
It would be a new moon or a full moon. Thursday is a new moon day?
The new moon is tomorrow.
Apparently, it's the third day. We have a list of days.
Because?
Because the energy is the energy, not the full energy.
I never heard that. I was married to a yoga teacher for years.
And is it the same system you're talking about?
Well, it's pretty much the same system, yeah. There's different kinds of yoga. But, yeah, I started doing Ashtanga yoga in 1969. I don't do it all the time. I'm just saying that was my first exposure to it. But I never heard that. My understanding of spiritual practice is daily. If you're doing it for weight loss and to look young, then that's a separate thing. If you're doing it for spiritual practice is done daily. It doesn't matter what the moon's doing. And actually, full moon in particular, new moon is very good for anything internal because the energy has been pulled in. It's for meditation. Full moon is heart opening. Moon is the heart. So, I know a surgeon who does not do surgery on the full moon because people bleed more profusely on the full moon. He's a plastic surgeon. So he won't do on the full moon. Yeah, and you know. They know.
Full moons were always the time when we had the most amount of people.
Yeah.
We made the most money.
Yeah. And it's also when hospitals and police are busiest and emergency, you call them here A&Es. In America, we call them emergency, I don't even remember now.
Why?
Full moon. People go a little bit lunar. They go loopy. They go lunar. Tony, how are you, buddy?
Good.
See ya. So, so there you have it. Okay.
I'll ask my question next time.
Full moon and new moon, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
To know. All right, so I've got a few things to share with you. I'm already putting her to sleep. He needs to share with you. Big yawn goes, oh, jeez. Is he starting at it again?
It has nothing to do with you. Believe me. 4 a.m. start.
4 a.m., huh?
I'm gone.
You beat me this morning. There are three... I thought we'd discuss a little bit about the three kinds of karma. There are three kinds or three types of karma. I don't know what you're thinking. I just want the good kind. The rest I can do without.
Right.
They are... Does anybody know the Sanskrit terms for these by any stretch? Prarabdha. Prarabdha. Sanchitta. And Kriyamana. Prarabdha. Sanchitta and Priyamana. Prarabdha karma is karma which is already manifest or which must manifest. Karma that cannot be changed, such as your bone structure, your body type, your DNA, your gender. Nowadays they're messing with that one. A good surgeon will sort that out, not on the full moon. So that's prarabdha. That's a done deal. Your parentage, your nationality can't be changed. Citizenship you can change, nationality you can't.
You mean heritage, more like
it. Heritage. Or who your parents were. Some prarabdha is pre-scheduled life events, which cannot be changed. Certain things, when you look at a astrology chart, I don't want to go too far into astrology, that wasn't my intention. But when I look at an astrology chart, I read three charts. I look at the main chart, where the planets were in the sky. Then I look at the moon chart. So you take the moon, you put the moon in the first house, and you leave all the planets where they are in their normal positions, but around the moon. And then I look at the Navamsa chart, which kind of tells you what's going on underneath, behind the scenes. So if you see in the main chart a particular influence, and you go, oh, this guy, this person is likely to be very successful in their career, in life, simple. So now we look at the moon chart. Does that show up again? Yes, it does. And does it show up in the Navamsa chart? Yes, it does. All three. Now your prediction is this person will be very successful in their career, and they will. Is supposing that influence, success in career, is in the first chart, the main chart, but absent in the other two, then you'd say you're likely to be successful in your career, depending. Then for me, it's not a done deal. And then we could look further in more detail in the other two charts and see, well, what might keep it away? For example, supposing it's a woman's chart I'm looking at. Well, how many women do you know, that got married and let it all go, career, and spent the next 20 years or 30 years being a wife and mother? Millions of them, you know, for example. So, some things cannot be changed, some things can. The next kind of karma is called sanchitta. Sanchitta is karma which exists in the subtle body. What is the subtle body? Subtle body is sometimes called the linga sharira. What is the subtle body? What is the gross body made up of? Thank you. It is indeed. Well, what are the five fundamental elements? Correct. But what are the elements themselves? Earth, water, fire, air, ether. And ether is the space in which everything occurs. But ether is important. It is an element. So that's the gross body. We know that. Right? The subtle body is three things. Mind, intelligence, or if you like, discriminating power, and ego, subtle body. Spiritual body is soul. Okay. Subtle body, mind, intelligence, and ego. Let me see it. Show it to me. You can't. You can only show me its symptoms. You know? When you die, if you were to dissect somebody at death, there's all the organs. They're all there. What's wrong? What's missing? The subtle body has left the building, along with Elvis. Subtle body, mind, intelligence, ego, wrapped around the soul. You got soul, subtle body, gross body. Okay. Right? They're wrapped around each other. So when the subtle body goes, we have death. The subtle body is joined at the umbilicus. If you can see people astral travel, what do you see? You see the subtle body, which looks exactly like the gross body, but ethereal in nature. And you can go flying off to see other planets or wherever you want to go in sleep. Some people can do it while awake. And off you go on your little adventure, and you are joined at the navel, the silver cord, they call it. Right? The soul is always in the subtle body. So at death, this cord becomes severed. That's all. And then the mind, intelligence, ego, along with the soul, goes on to the next birth, stage, experience, whatever it might be. Whatever. So, karma, which exists in the subtle body, mind, intelligence, ego, in a seedling or unmanifest form, such as habits of the mind. It starts as a seed that forms thoughts. Thoughts become words. Words become deeds, actions. Yoga and all mind-altering methodologies aim at what? They aim at reshaping or removing the sanchitta karmic tendencies. What are we doing here? Are we trying to change our bodily structure? Or our nationality? No. We are here because we want to reformulate, regenerate, reconfigure our minds, our hearts, our thought process. We want to spiritualize our material conditioning. Correct? That's what we're doing here. That's why you're doing yoga. You know, you can say you're doing it for physical benefit. Fine. But there's far more to it than that if you get serious about it. So, yoga and all mind-altering methodologies aim at reshaping or removing sanchitta tendencies. You can do mantras. You can do... I can't think of the word. Affirmations. You know, whatever. So that's sanchitta karma. The ones that can be changed, that are in seed form. The third type of karma is kriyamana. Kriyamana is future karma. That which is being generated through present action. Such as investing your money today in a stock or real estate and knowing that the return will come later. That's kriyamana. Going to the polls for the election that will happen here in Ireland in a mere few weeks, and voting in the new government
on a grey day.
In more ways than one. For example, whom you choose as friends is a process of kriyamana. Do you choose your associates as carefully as you would your financial investments? Your behavior this lifetime is an investment in your future. So how you behave when you're young will determine your health when you're older. How you behave in this time, in this life, will determine what your karma will be in the next life. Right. The ultimate investment is to do all actions on God's behalf so you don't get any what? Future karmic reaction. Because when you, as we said repeatedly here, when you offer your actions to God, all of your actions, be they spiritual or mundane, there is no karma attached. That neutralizes the karma. No more reactions means you get liberated. You don't have to take another body. So prarabdha is karma, which is already manifest, such as your body, your nationality, your bone structure, your parents. Sanchitta karma is karma which exists in the subtle body, like thoughts or habits of mind in seed form that can be changed. They're already there and they're going in this direction. And you say, I don't want them to go in this direction, so I'm going to work to change them and turn them into in this direction. That is sanchitta. And then kriyamana is that more the long-term karma, what you plan to do, and the long-term result in this lifetime and in future lifetime. Any questions?
Kriyamana, that's two words.
Kriyamana?
Kriyamana.
Yeah, it's K-R-I, no, it's one word. Well, you could divide it Kriya, Mana.
Is there a literal translation?
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me. Kriya means work. It means work or effort. I could look it up for you.
But the word pranayama being another...
Pranayama. Pranayama means to drill the breath or to control. Yama means control. But this is not yama, this is kriya mana. Yeah, so this is not the yama like you're thinking. Okay. Anybody got any good stories? Any shift in your life? Any coincidental serendipitous occurrences that we would enjoy hearing about?
I actually was trying to look into, Vipassana.
Vipassana?
Yeah. They have a retreat in England.
I think they're Buddhists, aren't they?
Yeah, they're Buddhists. I wanted to go into their retreat, and they have... So I check the time that I can do. It's end of February, early March. It's the 10 days, and you cannot have phone, you cannot have all this things.
Yeah.
So, but that particular one is for business executive. So I fill the form in on the internet, what business you do and everything, and I send it off. And I was surprised. It's interesting, you can try it. They then sent me another email and said, tell us more about your business and your turnover.
Your turnover?
Correct. Yeah, they want to know how much you're worth.
Yeah. And I said, sure, isn't God said we are all the same? Does it matter? I'm not interested in discussing what my turnover is. And your turnover, how many people work for you, and all of these things.
Pretty spiritual.
And I just said no, and then they sent me an email back and I said, you know, if we're all the same, and I said, it doesn't matter to me if the executive one is for special people, why don't you just put me in other one? I don't care, I just want to go into this retreat, you know. And they said, well, if you don't give us information about your turnover, then we cannot let you in.
Oh, that's a great place.
This was amazing.
Well, you know, there are certain organizations that are just focused on money.
But they have a
pension. Now, Kalindi had a really nice experience last week, a few days ago. I would like to say a couple things before she tells you her experience. If you're around somebody at the time of death, for whatever reason that you happen to be there, or it is your a loved one, family member, or maybe you work in a terminal ward at a hospital, for example, whatever it might be. If you can at all turn their attention to God right before they die, it is the best possible thing you could do. How do you do that? Well, the easiest way to do that is to chant the names of God or say a prayer of the names of God. You know, that which religion, whatever religion you like, for that matter, but that's the best thing to do. And to hear that in the ear before death or at the time of death could turn everything in their favor. It's that powerful. And there are story after story after story in the Vedas that tell you about that. We were reading some of them not long ago on Akadashi. So Kalindi, of course, knows this very well. And you want to tell what happened? I don't think they can see you through me.
I was driving to go see horses and
they can't see you. Come over here.
And as I drove around one of the corners going down the little road here, I just saw this sparrow hawk hammer this poor wood pigeon, and the feathers were all coming off them. And I jammed on the brakes and put my hazard light on because I was directly in the middle of a corner, and ran out, and the sparrow hawk kept going for me. He was like, "Are you going to take him? Am I going to take him?" So anyway, then the poor pigeon started to get away from me, and I picked him up and turned him up like this.
The sparrow hawk flew off.
He stood up in a tree watching to see if I'd put him away, and I thought, well, I can't put him in a hedge because he's definitely going to come back for him.
Yeah.
And then all his underneath was ripped open. So I thought, I've done this a few times, but rather than have him die in panic, I drove up the road with his blood down my hand with all them, and drove, and as the people were going past me, all the people out of my hand. But I just thought to myself, I can't save him. Mm-hmm. So I had been listening to chants on the radio, so I lashed those up and I started chanting my head off and chanting at him.
It was playing on the radio, on the CD at the time.
So I turned that up and I thought, well, at least I can do something for him. And then when I got up to the yard, they were like, what the hell do you have now? So I kept the chanting going in the car. I put him in a bucket and just let him there, and he died listening to the chant. And that's the second animal that's left its body in the exact same place with me chanting over it. Bizarre.
On the same place?
The exact same place,
the
yard. Yeah.
On the hill, on the corner?
Actually in the car park.
Oh, in the car park.
Last time it was a horse.
Well, I wasn't meant to be there for
put the horse down.
He took the horse out and injected it, and I wasn't expecting to be there, but I was able to chant while he was leaving his body. And I realised then that, you know, it was their time to go, regardless of whether a pigeon or a horse, and that it was their karma to get the chance to listen to the chant as they were leaving.
I've done that with them too. And it's a ghost was killed on the road there. And I now blocked the traffic for a few minutes, and it was just staring at me, and I was just chanting at it because I knew it was gone, and they were waiting for the vet, and I had to move, but I chanted the whole way back, but I knew it was just the right thing to do. So.
We were at Power City one Sunday. Well, I think we bought something. We came out, and there's a magpie baby who had fallen out of the nest right at the edge of the car park. So she says, "Oh, look, there's a magpie baby falling out of the nest." I said, "Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah."
"I'm going to go look at him." So she did. She comes back with the baby and puts him in. I don't know what you put him in. Something. Took him home.
I did try and find his parent on the nest.
Yeah, they wasn't available.
And the poor thing was...
So she puts them in her office in a little cardboard box, and then she feeds them prasadam. So offered food that we offer. So we offer the food. And so this magpie is, what was he eating?
Custard.
She was calling him custard because he was eating custard. So he's eating custard that we had offered to God. And she was nursing him back to health. Well, you know,
he was fine.
And then one day Doug the dash hound made short work of me and grabbed him.
He didn't even hurt him.
He killed him.
He was on the floor.
He
was there for a few days.
No, I had him.
We had photographs of him. So anyway, that's he got.
He didn't even hurt my nostrils enough to.
If you feed an animal food that you've offered, it very well may get a higher birth. Very well may get a human birth. You may be able to skip some of the stages and go right up to human birth. And the chanting, who knows, maybe that also can benefit the soul.
does the cows and accidents matter? Because obviously, the ISPCA or thing would say to put down cows, but of course they won't be able to hide them. So they have the room where they put them in, and they have 24/7 the chanting going on, and then the girls will go up, and they all take turns sitting with them and just chanting with them. And then in the last, I think, few months, there's been two that have just passed away as the people have been chanting.
Yeah, sometimes it's a very powerful experience. I'll tell you one more. I spoke to a very spiritual girl who's one of my clients. She's actually my god sister, which means we have the same guru. Our guru is long gone, but she's my god sister. I did an updated consultation for her birth chart, and we did it on Skype, and we've never met. So, she was in Florida. So, another god sister that was friends of both of us has died recently from cancer. Anyway, so I'm talking about her chart and what she's going through and this and that. And very nice lady. I mean, I could see, you could feel the spiritual energy coming off of her. And she's been on the path now for 30 or 40 years, you know. So she told me a story. She says she had just come back from India and went to India to, you know, practice yoga and go to the holy places, and as you do. And her father had passed. And she always had a very conflicted relationship with her father. He's a manipulative guy. I think she said maybe he drank, or I don't know. He was an abrasive sort of a guy. They didn't have a good relationship. And so there she is with her father's ashes in the urn. And she says, well, I'm going to India. I should take his ashes and put him into Yamuna River. The river that is sacred to Krishna. It's sacred like the Ganges. It's a very good place for your ashes to go. As, you know, if you're going to put your ashes someplace. And plus you're flying all the way to India. And she says, no. He doesn't deserve that. Why would I do that for him? He didn't believe in any of that stuff. All he did was give me grief about my spiritual practice. So she was conflicted like this, having this internal conversation. Finally, she relented and said, okay, I'll take him to India. So she went to India. And she went into the Yamuna River. And I've been there many times. It's a magical place. Magical. Everybody there is God conscious. In Vrindavan, where Krishna was born. I mean, pretty much everybody. So she waded out, you know, up to her waist in the water. And she took the lid off. I guess she had an urn. And she was like this, holding the urn. And she was about to tip it over so the ashes would come out. But at that moment, there were no waves. At that moment, a wave came. And the river reached into the urn and pulled the ashes out. The water went in and pulled them into the river. And at that moment, her heart blew open. And all of the anger and the frustration and angst and all the stuff around her relationship with her father released as the Yamuna took his ashes. And she broke down and convulsed and cried. And it was wonderful. It was such a release for her. So, that was the story.
I suppose it was a teacher.
Yeah. Yeah.
She finally had to surrender.
Yeah.
That love.
Exactly. I myself had a meditation not so long ago on my two mothers. Did I say that last time? And, you know, my two mothers, my birth mother and adoptive mother, you know, let's just say I wouldn't have the best mother karma in this lifetime. Let's put it that way. And, you know, I don't really have any anger toward them. And I worked through most of the stuff around them. But, I don't know, I was meditating one morning in here. And I was meditating on the guru and guru figures, spiritual teachers. And all of a sudden, my two mothers appeared. My meditation. And I saw it from a perspective that I had never seen it before in my life. These are two of the most important, or the most important teachers in your lifetime. These two women. And they took on the thankless task of teaching you the hardest lessons you had to learn. And it was a thankless task. And no one would put their hands up for that job. But they did. And all the stuff that went with it. But these are two of the most, arguably, the most difficult lessons I had to learn. And when I saw it from that point of view, and what they had done for me, it was a big shift. Big shift. You know, I had come to a point of neutrality, but I hadn't truly thanked them. I hadn't come to the point of saying, thank you for all that stuff you put me through. But I did. I did come to that point, so.
Compassion.
Yeah. Well, it's also seeing it from a different perspective, you know. It's very freeing. It's very liberating. Yeah.
More love.
More love. The more love. Okay. Anybody else?
Very interesting. It's not a very interesting realization from your story. Your power. Not my own fault.
Same.
Yeah, it's there for all of us, you know?
It's there for all of us.
It's not necessarily your parents either.
Could be anybody.
Anybody in your life, you know?
Yeah.
Courage that hits you over the head in the road, you know? Whatever. People attack people, whatever.
Could be anything.
Giving drugs, whatever. It's the same. Same story.
Yeah. Okay, read you a couple more things or discuss a couple more things. This is a book by Bhaktivinod Thakur, who you may not have heard of. He knew six languages. He was born in Bengal. I think he might have been a contemporary of Rabindranath Tagore. I can't remember now. Highly educated man. He wrote maybe 30 books. And he was a judge, court, sitting on the court. And he was a very deeply devoted devotee of Krishna. And he comes down in the same line. But he has a very unique perspective on things. I mentioned to you last week, the last time before, his was the statement that we're on a journey, and the journey is to go back home, back to Godhead, back to the spiritual realm. That's the goal. That's the destination. When you're on a journey here in the material world, say we're going to, I don't know,
Cork.
And we have to stay overnight someplace, and we take we take a room at the inn. Do we then plan to redecorate the inn? Do we take time and energy and, you know, changing the furniture and getting rid of this and bringing in that and redoing the menu and making suggestions? No. So what are you doing here? We're just passing through. It's not that you can't redecorate, but, you know, you're passing through. Don't get too serious about what's going on here. Don't lose sight of the goal. Don't forget you're on the journey. So that was his analogy. Huh?
What is the goal?
Well, one was to go to Cork, and the other one was to go back to the spiritual world. Okay. Prakriti, Maya, Pradhana, Prapancha, and Avidya are all different names of the same principle, according to its different phases and attributes. What principle are they talking about?
Illusion.
Maya. Material nature. Maya is not an independent shakti or energy from the supreme swarup shakti, not independent from God. She, Maya is a female, energies of God are feminine. She is simply a devotee serving God in executing his orders to reform those who have become ungrateful to him in the material world. Maya is in charge of God's house of correction. Welcome to the house of correction. Welcome to Mount Joy. Welcome to Alcatraz. House of correction. And her energy is a reflection of God's supreme power. Those jivas, what's a jiva? Souls, who abused their free will and forgot that they were eternal servants of God and thought of enjoying for themselves means separate from God, were captured by Maya for their penal servitude and correction.
Says the judge.
Maya has three attributes. The gunas. What are they? Sattva, rajas, tamas. Goodness, passion, ignorance. Three modes of nature. Or contentment, desire, delusion. Goodness, contentment, desire, passion, delusion, ignorance. Those are the three states of mind, three states of being here in this world. Everyone falls into those categories or into combinations of those categories. We've talked about them 100 times. Those attributes are just like chains used to bind the ungrateful souls. Maya then applies a double casing on the spiritual form of the soul. The casing is described by the words linga and stula in Sanskrit. Subtle and gross bodies. We already talked about it. So linga is subtle, mind, intelligence, ego. And stula is gross body, earth, water, fire, air, ether. After encasing the spiritual form of the soul, Maya employs the fallen souls in different kinds of work. Mayic work, or work that falls under the influence of Maya, is composed of karma, akarma, vikarma. Karma means action, work. Yeah, well, sometimes karma means action, reaction, but in this case, we're saying work, action. So, akarma, karma, and vikarma. Karma is conventionally good action done to obtain virtue. Good action done to obtain virtue. Punya means virtue. Good action, a good result. Acting in accordance with dharma. Virtue being responsible, doing your duty, carrying out your obligations to self, to others, to society. That's what they mean there. You know, you go to work every day, you're there on time, you do what you're paid to do, you do what you say you're going to do, you do your best job. That's what we're talking about here. Such as performance of duties enjoined by Varnashram Dharma. That's what we're talking about. Keep it simple. Akarma is the omission of prescribed duties. I don't want to work. What do you want to do? Nothing. Collect a doll. Why? Are you? You can't find a job? No. You have no skills? No. I just don't want to work. That's akarma. I don't want to participate. I want to collect, but I don't want to give. I don't want to offer anything in return. That's akarma. It's the omission of prescribed duty. He's not necessarily doing anything harmful. He's just not doing anything. And then the third one, vikarma, is sin or crime. So vikarma is when you're doing things hurtful to others. Is sin or crime. You think maybe this government's done one or two things along that line, but I might be wrong. Karma is rewarded by heavenly elevation to the heavenly realms or higher realms up to the standard of Brahmaloka. So you reap what you sow. You do good deeds, you get good karma, you get raised up on the material plane. There are heavenly realms. It's not heaven in the sense of the spiritual world. It's a higher realm in the material world. And you stay there until your sukriti is exhausted, until your merits are exhausted. It's just like when you have this card, they call it a laser card, an ATM card, and you can spend until the money in the account is exhausted. Correct? And then they'll say, this card wouldn't go through. You go.
Right.
Yeah, the bank must have made a mistake. I don't know what's going on here. That's what you say. I just put $10 million in there today. I don't know. Right? Okay. Akarma, being negligent, places one in an unpleasant state on earth. That's what you get. You get an unpleasant state on earth. Now he's really referring to the next life. So if you don't make a contribution, you don't do anything of value for anybody, then you can come back here in an unpleasant state. And you know what that means because you've seen many examples of it. And vikarma hurls souls down into hellish life. Lower realms. Suffering. Now, there's hellish life here on this planet. There's all kinds of places where you will absolutely agree it's hellish life. And you'd rather watch it on the news. If you want to watch it at all, then visit. In Cairo right now, the people are trying to gain their freedom, and it's at the moment, it's very hellish. All the stuff going on there. For example, the fallen souls travel from body to body with their linga deha, their subtle body, doing karmas or vikarmas, rising up to the heavens, and again coming down at the exhaustion of their virtues.
It's like your trip to court and now you've taken a whole bunch of side trips.
Yeah. Going down to hell and after suffering punishment again, rising up to the platform of fruit of work. That's what this earthly realm is very much that. The platform of fruit of work. Because in the earthly realm, you can rise up, you can go down, you can hang around on the same level, or you can actually free yourself. That's why taking birth here is key. This is a golden opportunity. Golden, if you've got a human body. Ka-ching, ka-ching. So, again, rising up to the platform of fruit of work. Thus, the state of the fallen souls is deplorable to the extreme degree, as they sometimes suffer massacre and murder, and sometimes enjoy as princes, queens, and kings. The material world is therefore a prison or a house of correction and not a place for enjoyment, as some people assert. So there you have it. Questions? Okay, then the soul at some point will grow tired of all of this perambulation, ups, downs, sideways, and say, what am I doing? Get me off of this wheel. The wheel of samsara, repeated birth and death. So then maybe he begins to turn his attention toward God. Bhakti means
service.
Love. Devotion. Devotional service. Bhakti is also yoga, a form of yoga. Bhakti is a principle which comes from soul to soul, and like electricity or magnetism in gross matter, it conducts itself from one congenial source to another. Just as love conducts itself from one congenial source to another. The difference with bhakti is we're aiming it at God. The principle of bhakti is sincere, complete dependence on the Supreme Lord in every act of life. The principle of duty is no part of bhakti, as it acts on the basis of gratitude for favors obtained. So, common duty that we do every day has really nothing to do. It's a good thing to do. Karma was the definition. They call that karma, fulfilling your duty. And in exchange for fulfilling your duty, you'll get good reaction. You'll get a good result. But it's all material. That's the point. Action, reaction. Whereas bhakti is lifting you above that. That's the point. The principle of duty is not part of bhakti, as it acts on the basis of gratitude for favors obtained, and it involves obligation which is contrary to natural love. Bhakti means love, but what kind of love?
Unconditional
love. Mostly the love you experience in the material world, now you can correct me if you want, and you may have experienced this other love too, but most of it is conditional. Even the love of parents can oftentimes be conditional. You know, having been a father myself, I would look at my children, especially when they were newly arrived, and love them. My love for them was very unconditional. I can say that honestly. It's really when I started to learn about unconditional love and what it was like. And then they grew up a little bit and their egos arrived. Their egos developed. Then it was harder to love them unconditionally. And then the egos really developed. And then it really got tough. So you can love unconditionally here on this plane, but it's not often done. That's all.
Be done through practice.
Be done through practice. Fair enough. So, the principle of morality in the mortal world, though good in its own way, scarcely brings spiritual results in the end. Faith in the supreme beauty of the Lord, a desire for the eternal unselfish service of that supreme being, and a consequent repulsion of every other thought of pleasure or self-aggrandizement are the three principles which constitute Shraddha. So what he's saying here is Shraddha is faith. As long as you keep placing yourself at the center and your own needs at the center, you're not practicing unconditional love. And you're not surrendering to God. Because you're saying, in effect, what's in it for me? Okay, I'll surrender to you, but what do I get out of the deal? Which is the same thing as karma and morality and doing your duty. Okay, I'll come in to work every day, I'll do my best job, but how much are you paying me? And if I stop paying you, will you still do it? Not likely. So, Shraddha means faith, and he calls this, or actual hankering after bhakti, after devotion. Bhakti by nature is ananya, which means exclusive. Is it chance then which brings bhakti? No. So in other words, is it by chance that people develop love for God? By some quirk of fate? No. Sukriti, or good work, is the prime moving principle. When you've done enough good work over a period of enough lifetimes, and you've effectively spiritualized yourself, you're functioning on a higher level of vibration repeatedly, then you start this love or opening of the heart takes place. Good work is of two types. One type, passing as morality, includes those works which bring virtue and aggrandizement. The other type of good work includes all activities which have a tendency to bring spiritual progress. So one is kind of on the mundane level, doing good for people. The other one is spiritual in nature. This latter type of good work, or sukriti, brings one in contact with a sincere devotee of God, or somebody, a spiritual person, a holy person, a realized person, from whom one can initially imbibe Shraddha, or faith. Faith in spirit, and being then capable of receiving bhakti, devotion, love. One obtains the seed of devotional service from that spiritual person. And that person becomes the guru. Not the only guru, but a guru figure, because they have awakened this bhava, this feeling within you. Questions? Comments? So, karma, akarma, vikarma. Are those clear? So,
like an addiction.
So I feel like I'm so addicted to the whole spirituality.
Like, I love it, but maybe I'm a little bit too much. So is that like an addiction? Yo, man. You know, don't you, yo, man. This is how you know. See, an addiction gives immediate pleasure and satisfaction. But ultimately, it destroys you. Ultimately, it has an immediate benefit and an ultimate negative effect. If you're addicted to alcohol, you could say, well, wait a second, I just had a couple of pints. I feel great. And no one can argue with that. Now, let's look 20 years down the line and take a look at your man. He doesn't look great, but he still might say the same. You know, so that's the nature of addiction. If it has a negative connotation or a negative result, then how can it be spiritual? Or vice versa. You know, spirituality should not be thought of as an addiction. It should be thought of as one developing love and devotion, not addiction. You know, if you can't get enough of God, great. Because chances are then at the end of your lifetime, you won't take another birth. That's the whole idea. You know, you become like, as we've said so many times, at the end of your lifetime, then whatever you remember, that state you will attain. Okay? So let us. Everybody got the mantra? We've done this before. This is a Ram mantra. Ram is one of the 10 major avatars or incarnations of Vishnu. He was a warrior prince who walked the earth in Treta Yuga, the Silver Age. Pardon me. Silver Age of the universe. The purpose of his incarnation was to protect the virtuous and annihilate the nefarious Ravana, a powerful demon whom the gods could not defeat. When we were in India, we went to the place where Ram built the bridge across the ocean to Lanka. Rama represents spiritual bliss or unadulterated happiness. When used as an adjective, it means pleasing, delightful, beautiful, lovely, and charming. And this is exactly how Ram was perceived by all when he appeared on Earth thousands of years ago. Ram is considered by some to be the most potent and valuable name of God that one can chant. Chanting the name Ram will remove negative karma and purify a soul quickly and effectively. Now, Ram was, you know, don't let this be lost on you. He was actually a king. He was a prince. He became a king after his kingdom was stolen from him. And he went into exile for 14 years. He had to defeat Ravan. Then he came back and his kingdom was restored to him. There are a lot of negative forces in our world, in positions of leadership. And they are not doing the right thing for the people. They are not. This country is in a very, very difficult situation because of such forces, frankly. Because of this cronyism and this network of corruption. This is not the only country like that. But here, we're definitely seeing that. And who's paying the price for all this? The people. Who were not the perpetrators. So, why am I telling you that? Because we need Rom-like beings at this time to step up. Now, whatever that means, you know, you can just be a Rom-like being very quietly in your own reality. Or, you know, maybe you could start your own political party here and make a difference. The Rom Party. Start the Rom Party. Okay, so Sri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram.
And you can also just chant it as a, like that?
Yeah, you can chant it on Beijing. Sri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram, Sri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram.
But the translation. That when Gandhi was dying, that he was chanting Rama mantra.
Ram, Ram. Yeah. Yeah, Ram is very, very powerful. It's very simple. What was the one with the Valmiki? How did it go? Valmiki was a hunter, and he killed animals. That's what he did. And he's a very sort of low vibration guy. And sometimes, you know how it works with fate, that fate chooses very unlikely characters to do things. So Narada Muni, the sage Narada, appeared. And he said to Valmiki, because he knew what the future was going to be. He didn't tell him that, but he said, you need to stop killing animals. Stop making your living killing animals. Mm. And Valmiki said, that's what I do. You know, I kill animals. And he says, well, Renata says, you should chant the name of Ram. And it will liberate you from this sinful or negative action, you know. And Valmiki says, no, I don't want to chant that. He says, no, I'm going to chant Ram. I'm going to chant death. That's what I'm going to chant. That's my mantra, death. When I show up, death shows up. So he says, my mantra is Mara. 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 Which means death in Sanskrit. And Narada says, yes, that's fine. You chant this mantra. But chant it, the words, one after the other. One after the other. What? He says, do me one favor. Just chant the words back to back, one after the other. Can you do that? Yes, I can do that. So, and he says, I'll come back and see you in 2 weeks. So he came back 2 weeks later, and there's Valmiki. He's sitting there in Padmasana, and he's chanting, Mara, 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 he tricked him and he is chanting Rama, 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 Rama. Said, Rama, 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 Rama. And he became a great devotee of God. and a great sage, and he wrote the Ramayana. He wrote the whole thing. So that's why I say destiny picks strange beings. So he was the person who was supposed to do it, but he was in no condition to do it. At that point, he had to be purified and lifted up. Yeah. Okay, so let's have some meditation. And we'll... Can you meditate in G, Antonio?
Oh, a little bit fast for me.
A minor. So G sharp? That's A minor. All right. We're meditating in G sharp, A minor. Close your eyes. Breathe. Relax. And let go. Deeply, deeply relax and let go. Allow the stress, the tension, the fear, the apprehension to drain from your body. Totally, completely relax. Breathe. And let go. High above, a beautiful beam of radiant light comes down from the heavens, down, down, all the way down, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms and legs, out the bottom of your feet and into the earth below. Breathe, relax, and let go. See and feel yourself by means of this light, connected to the heavens above, and ground it in the earth below. Breathe, relax, and let go. All right. You're in a forest. And you're walking along a path through the forest. And you come to a fork in the path. One path goes off to the right, and one goes off to the left. More or less, like a fork. Which one will you take? And why? Why are you choosing the left one over the right one, or the right one over the left one? What is the reason? Do you see something? Is there a sign? Is there an omen? Or is it a feeling? Take the fork in the road. Up ahead, after you walk for some time, an animal appears on your path ahead of you. Maybe 20 feet ahead of you. What kind of animal or bird is it? What is it doing? How does it respond to you when it sees you? Okay. Continue along the path. And ahead, you see a person coming toward you. This person is maybe 50 feet in front of you in the path, but walking toward you. They come closer and closer. What do they look like? Is it a man? Is it a woman? Is it a boy? Is it a girl? Who is it? What is it? Do you know this person? Is it a stranger? How are they dressed? What is their attitude? Their disposition? Eventually, the person reaches you. What do they say to you when they finally reach you? What do they say? What do they tell you? What is your reply? The person continues on their path, and you on yours, and you go on. A 100 feet into the distance, the path turns abruptly, and it ends. You come to the end of this path. And what is there? What is there for you at the end of this journey? What do you see? And how do you feel about it? Okay. Continue with these steps until you've done all the steps. When you've finished all of the steps, slowly return to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace. Okay. Yeah, that was an arduous journey. Okay, well, it's after 10, we'll Om Tat Sat. Hare Krishna.